Is that Fozzie?
Yeah.
Fozzie is always welcome.
Fonzie?
Fozzie.
Fozzie, like the Muppets.
Oh, okay. I was like, Fonzie is kind of an awesome name for a cat, actually.
It's not bad. I'm here to stay in the Drupal way, where I leave behind beliefs from yesterday. Welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast number 147. My name is Mike Anello, and I will be your host today along with Mr. Ted Bowman.
Hey, Mike. Hey, everybody.
Ted, looking forward to hearing about MidCamp. That's one of our stories coming up. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. It was a great experience. I look forward to talking about it.
All right, cool. And Ryan Price, how's it going, Ryan? I think Ryan's on mute because he was relocating his cat. Look at that. He's still on mute. Okay, well, Ryan will sneak in a second. And Adam Honick, our guest for today. Adam, how are you?
I am doing pretty excellent, Mike.
All right. So, Adam, we are going to talk to you today about a few things, most importantly about the Drupal module upgrader, which I don't think it's proper to actually call it a module, correct?
I don't think I'd really call it a module either. It's more of a Drush command.
Right. All right. So let's get to that in a few minutes. First of all, for people who don't know you, and well, that kind of includes me up to a few weeks ago, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into Drupal.
I got into Drupal, in 2007, I started working for this small agency in Cambridge called Digital Loom, and a little bit after I joined, we brought on a guy who became our technical director, and he sort of brought with him all this knowledge of Drupal. He said, okay, we're going to be a Drupal shop now, and that was back when Drupal 5 was the version of Drupal. So I've been building sites with it and writing modules and, you know, writing themes and just kind of being a Drupal generalist since 2007. That's what I was doing for about 6 years. And then last year, I did an awesome 3-month internship at Acquia to write the Drupal module upgrader. And that's how I've come to be a little bit in the spotlight, as it were.
There you go. All right. So people can find you online. And I want to usually we cover this at the very end of the podcast, but I figured we could do it right at the top because you have a very unique username, Fena Proxima.
Yeah, it's an unusual one.
Yeah, it actually took me a little bit of work to find like your name.
To find my real name or my
your real name. Like you use Fena Proxima like
yeah.
a lot.
That's true. I'm kind of cagey about it. I think my real last name sounds kind of like Klingon, so I sort of prefer the more celestial sounding Fena Proxima. That's just me being cagey, really.
So where does that come from, Fena Proxima?
It comes from, well, it's my DJ name and my producer name. I'm into electronic music. I make it, I spin it. At least 10 years ago, when I was living in Vancouver as a student, I had a much crappier DJ name that I won't repeat, and I was just looking for – I was trying to figure out a new one, and I was sitting on a bus one day, and there were these two kids near me just, like, talking in some other language. It sounded like Spanish, and as they got off the bus, I heard them say something that sounded like Fena Proxima. I was like, ooh, that's it. I like that. And so I just latched on to that and, you know, threw a PH in front of it. I was like, okay, I'm going with that. And I have not stopped using it.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's just kind of a serendipitous username, serendipitous alias that I use.
All right, very good. So that was very important because I needed to know that ever since I first met you. So I should also mention, you know, we asked you on for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, obviously because of Drupal module upgrader, which we're going to be talking about a bunch. But as kind of a preview, you are going to be one of our featured speakers at Florida Drupal Camp.
Yes, I am.
Coming up in about, what's that, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, it's like 2.5 weeks.
Sooner than you think.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're going to be doing a double-length session, and it's going to be hands-on and all kinds of fun and awesomeness. And so I guess the idea is if people want to see in real time how to take a Drupal 7 module and get And I'll let you fill in the percentage. I'll say somewhere between 50 and 90% of the way, maybe.
I would say it's the whatever percentage it is that we can turn the module on and it won't completely hose the site. Yeah, you know, good enough, basically. And I'm definitely, you know, I'm crowdsourcing this one because I'm open for suggestions about what module people would like to see upgraded, as long as it's not something crazy. Like someone tweeted at me yesterday, they said you should upgrade panels.
And
upgrading panels.
Yeah, that was Damien, who's he used to live here in Florida. He's a friend of all of ours, so I'm sure he was just giving me a hard time.
Yeah, well, I mean, he can upgrade panels if he wants. So I'm not doing it. But yeah, I mean, if anyone has any thoughts on that, tweet it at me. You
know? Right. All right, so let's we're dancing around a little bit here. So Ryan, I see you're on the call. So
yes, sir.
Welcome, Ryan. How are you?
Good. Waffles is fine too.
Okay, very good. All right, so let's dive right in here and Drupal module upgrader. So in the past, we've had semi-automated ways of migrating modules from 5 to 6 and 6 to 7, but this seems like a little bit of a different beast. So why don't you kind of give us the 10,000-foot view of what Drupal Module Upgrader is?
I don't know if I would necessarily say it's that different of a beast. It might be sort of a more powerful beast, mm-hmm. But it's sort of the same concept overall as Deadwood and Coder Upgrade, where the whole point is just to help you. It's not, you know, it's not to do all your work for you, of course, but it's just to help you learn how to upgrade modules from 7 to 8 and to sort of do a little and kind of do some of the drudgery for you. And it's, you know, it runs as a Drush command under a Drupal 8 install, and it's pretty robust. It's pretty powerful. It's also pretty extensible because it was written to be API for developers to hook into and like add their own routines to convert modules or to analyze modules and find problems and stuff like that. So that allows it to keep current very easily with the stuff that's happening in D8 head.
Are there any other requirements other than having, I guess, Drush and D8?
Not really. I mean, you just download it. You do have to turn it on as a module because it implements a couple of theme hooks, weirdly enough. And yeah, you download it, you run a Composer install to get the dependencies, and that's pretty much it. You just have just run it with Drush 7, and that's it.
So have you, I mean, I'm sure you have, but as far as you know, while you have been developing it, have you been upgrading modules along the way?
while I was developing it, I was mostly running it against two or three well-chosen modules to make sure that some of the cases would work. But no, I haven't really been using it to upgrade modules, mostly because I don't really – this and like basically one other module are right. The modules I maintain, and the other one I want to rewrite it anyway. Right. So I personally have not been using it, which sounds kind of hypocritical. But I mean, I've definitely been hearing – from people who have been using it, and I think it's appreciated, and I think it does a pretty good job for the most part. And so, you know, go ahead.
No, what does it actually do? So let's just maybe dive into some details for a few minutes. I know like one of the big changes in D7 and D8 module development is obviously the routing system. Okay, that's so does it look at like your hook menu stuff in the D7 module and somehow translate that into a YAML and a bunch of other stuff?
It does, and it's actually funny you should mention that one because that was a bugaboo that just took me like a month to figure out because the hook menu is so complicated and it's really, really hard to untangle all that stuff. But as a result of, I'm going to be self-promotional here. Yeah. As a result of my heroic efforts on that, it does actually. It is able to sort of parse your hook menu and to generate like a YAML file and sort of shell or stub controller classes for you to then kind of fill in. As I say, it doesn't do every single thing for you. There's a lot that really requires human intervention, particularly when upgrading from D7 to D8. But it's really, like overall, it's really kind of a there's two modes really in the Drupal module operator. The first one is the analyze mode, and that's just a read-only mode where it'll parse your module, it'll scan through it and just look for things that you have to pay attention to, like, oh, hey, there's no more hook block info, these are now plugins, or mm-hmm. hey, there's no more hook menu, you have this new routing system and this new link system. To even smaller things like, oh, hey, you know, there's no more cache get, or like this function's been renamed, or this has been moved into this class, and sure. all this kind of stuff. And it'll pinpoint exactly where these things have been, like where exactly in your module you need to change them, like this file, this line. And it'll compile all that information into this HTML file, and it'll just dump it right there in the module directory so that you can look through it and be like, oh, okay, I see what I have to do here. And it'll also link you off to the documentation on Drupal.org that explains more about that particular change and, like, you know, how to fix it and what the nature of the change is. So analyze mode is very educational, and it's a really mm-hmm. good, it makes a roadmap for you to at least, yeah, it makes a roadmap for you to upgrade your module so you know what you have to fix. And that's the first part of it. And then the second part is the conversion mode, which is more hands-on, as the name implies, and that just gets in there and it, where possible, it actually rewrites your code for you. So in the case of blocks is a really good example. It'll go through, it'll parse your hook block info, and then for each block you define in there, it will generate a class, you know, with like some fix me comments in there where it's like, hey, move your logic from hook block save for this block into there, and, you know, move your hook block view logic mm-hmm. Into here. So it'll do some work for you in that sense. And like, obviously, as you said, in the example of hook menu, it'll actually try to create page controllers, form controller classes, that kind of stuff. And like, honestly, like the conversion mode is very, it's a little, I don't want to say hit or miss, but it, like the amount that it can do for you varies, because particularly with D8, like a lot of stuff, you know, you have to refactor anyway, you know, because mm-hmm. we've changed from procedural code to object-oriented, and, you know, we're using all this new stuff, we're using all these components, we're using dependency injection, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just goes on and on. So to be fair, like a lot of the code that conversion mode generates is pretty messy and doesn't even necessarily use best practices, but the goal is just to get it to a point where hopefully it won't bork your site when you turn it on. And then you just get to work. So it's just it starts you off.
So it sounds like, and I was going to mention the block stuff, because I think that's a very good example as well. Because in D7, as you said, there's two or three API functions that you really have to know in order to implement a custom block. And in D8, blocks are plugins. Everything about a block lives in its own class. So it sounds like from what you're saying is what the conversion mode does is it will look at your hook block info and see that, oh, you're defining five blocks here. I'm going to create five classes, and I'm assuming it creates each class in its own file at the right PSR4 path yep. and all that.
Yep.
But what it doesn't do is it doesn't go back to hook block view and start moving code from there into each class.
It doesn't do that, and there's no plans to make it do that. The reason being that would require like Skynet levels of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Like we would just, because like particularly when you have something like hook block save or hook block view, where it's like, oh, here you have a delta, and you're going to switch on this delta, and so like there's about a million different ways to write a function like that. So sure. It kind of depends on you to go back in there and say, okay, you pull out your logic and you refactor it and you put it into the class the way you want. That being said, there are some cases where it can even do more, like to convert forms, for example. Like, you know how in D7 a form is a callback function and mm-hmm. possibly some other callback functions, like a validate function and a submit function.
Mm-hmm.
Like in those cases, it can actually do a little more, where it can create the form class, it can actually just move the callback into that class just wholesale, and the validator and the submitter, and can just package it all together. So it can do a little bit more for forms. It's very, very case by case in terms of how much work it can save you, but so it definitely saves you work.
It sounds like there's and Ted, I'll shut up after this question. It sounds like there's definitely areas of the API where you focused as far as what was going to be converted, or at least the start of a conversion. Now, you mentioned routing, blocks. You just mentioned forms. Are there other kind of like high use areas that you've focused a bunch of time on?
I'm trying to think. I mean, definitely like routing, blocks, and forms are kind of the big three in terms of like what people are sort of entering, what people sort of start with when they start developing for Drupal. I mean, the first thing I wrote was probably like a hook form alter, and I'm guessing I'm not the only one, you know, and then you kind of move on to custom blocks and stuff like that. So
how about roles? Role and hook permissions?
I did actually handle hook permission in some cases. I definitely handled hook permission because it's so – I was actually really pleased by that because that was an easy one. It's just all you do now for permissions is you define them in a YAML file instead of returning an array.
Right.
So all I had to do was parse the hook and write the return value into YAML, which is one line of code. It's one method call. So that was actually a really nice, easy one to do. But like the thing is that these routines are – they're all these conversion routines and the analysis stuff. It's all implemented as plugins using the Drupal 8 plugin system, and that means you can very easily extend it. You can just provide plugins that are analyzers or converters to do whatever you want.
Right. I think Ted's going to ask you about the Field API now.
Can we just take a break just for half a second? He just said module is extensible, so that if you wrote your own module and you wrote several modules that are all have a similar need, you can freaking extend it. That's probably one of the biggest unheard benefits about anything about Drupal 8 is that you're not like copying and pasting code from one area to another and then rewriting it. You are extending it.
Yeah,
I'm
but
sorry.
Nobody wants
it,
to
it hurts my brain it. Because people don't talk about that enough.
Nobody wants to extend it, Ryan. Everybody just wants the magic button. The one that says turn this.
Ted doesn't want the magic button. Ted wants to experience pain. Ted ever shown you like all the little scars on his arms from when he's had to code for hours and hours on end?
Not the coding scars, no.
No.
I know people want a magic button, but I've said from day one, and Angie says the same thing if you ask her, it ain't a magic bullet, and it's never going to be a magic bullet. So, you know, that's one of the things I always harp on that. I'm like, you must refactor anyway. You know, I'm saving you a couple of hours, but I'm not, you know, Drupal Module Upgrader will not do your work for you.
Let's let Ted get his question in. Here.
Yeah.
Does it take care of annotations for plugins like blocks?
Yes. Yes, it does.
And, right, very good, Ted. That's enough.
I'll be going now.
Back to your coding.
As far as the analyze mode, do you have any idea like what percentage of hooks you have covered in Drupal 7?
I mean, there's a gazillion hooks in Drupal 7, and even there's a ton of hooks in Contrib, too, for that matter. Mm-hmm. I definitely have – I mean, I could look at it right now, but I have probably – I'd say I have like at least, I probably have like the top 10 covered in terms of like, that's one of the things Angie gave me before I even started this project. And she's like, here's a list of all Drupal 7 hooks ordered by how often they're implemented. Like hook menus, obviously at the top. Mm-hmm. So I definitely got probably most of the top 10. There were some that weren't really ready, that were sort of like in flux in core, at the time I was writing this. So, I'd say I probably got the most important ones. I definitely got hook menu. I definitely got blocks. You know, hook permission I got. Then like some of the entity hooks, a lot of those ones like sort of hook node save or hook node insert, hook node update, hook user insert, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like those are all covered at least in analyze mode. It's actually a lot easier to have an analyzer for something than a converter generally. So there's a lot of points, like tons and tons of stuff is covered by the analyzers. Less than is covered by the converters, more than is covered by the converters.
What's it pegged against as far as when somebody gets it? Are they going against, is there a documentation on which beta or what release they like a particular version of Upgrader is pegged against as far as Drupal 8?
No, there's nothing. It's just pegged against, it's basically just whenever I see something, there's like an API change notices page on d.o.
Yeah.
And pretty much I just check it frequently, and like anytime I see something that looks like I want to have it in Drupal Module Upgrader, I just write a plugin or I, you know, add some configuration to make that work, and then I commit it, and that's that. So yeah, it's not really pegged against core or anything like that.
Okay.
I just say use the latest version.
Are you getting much help from anybody else in forms of patches? I see, you know, Angie looks like she's fairly active.
Oh yeah, Angie's I call her Webchick Test Case. She's great at finding bugs. I've gotten a few patches, not as many as I would ideally like.
Sure.
I feel like people are probably more focused on getting D8 out the door, which is obviously completely respectable, and I'm pro that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I would love for people to write more plugins and cover stuff if there was interest on it. And I wrote developer documentation for that purpose. So basically, I would love it. I would love to see it, but I haven't seen as much of it as I would ideally like.
Have you heard from other module maintainers that have used this as far as, hey, this is great, it got me, you know, 75% of the way? Anything anecdotal like that?
Strangely, no. I'm either not paying attention either I'm not paying attention or it doesn't do as good a job as I hope.
Well, I think, you know, there's probably a couple little things. I mean, I think, and Ted, you know, you'd be a perfect person to ask for this. So forget about you, Adam. I'm going to talk to Ted here for a second. Ted, when you go to upgrade Entity Form, I mean, would you consider using something like this? Or is that one of those things where you're going to refactor it anyway, so you probably would just do it, you know, on your own?
The analyze mode is really interesting to me because I think if I was upgrading a bunch of modules, I definitely think the converter would be good. But I think the first one I do, I'd want to like maybe use the analyze mode to say, okay, this hook, look for this documentation or whatever. Seems like it would just save me some time as far as, okay, I'm going to Google this hook and find the change log. And sounds like, you know, part of the whole process of making this upgrader was already doing that and getting the correct links. And so I would definitely use it for the analyze part. I think the first module I actually worked on Entity Forms at MidCamp, and I like to look at core for something similar and try to figure out what it's doing. But yeah, I would definitely use the analyze.
Right. And then, so Ryan, I know that you like me tend to write a lot of like small custom modules for client work.
Yeah.
So have you used the either Deadwood or Coder upgrade in the past when you had to move a module from 6 to 7 or 5 to 6?
Pretty much no. I could think of a situation where I maybe... No, I think my method is more like the, you know, just keep reloading the site until the white screen is gone. and I'm looking at the change log. I think we already referenced this page. The page that says like, if you want to upgrade a module, change hook perm to hook permission. You know, change your hook block into three different hook block info, hook block view, hook block save, that kind of stuff. You know. Because it was pretty procedural, you know, it was like there's a set of steps, and given the first time I do something, I want to do it manually, like I want to have like gone through all the steps, and half the time I'm thinking also is because I tend to be the kind of person that I know in a few days I'm going to have to teach this, or what's happening more often is the case is that the first time I try something is while I'm teaching someone, so. Mm-hmm. I'm figuring it out while I'm explaining it to them. There's lots of things people ask me I've never come across in the real world, but I go, okay, well, I understand this is what I'm supposed to be doing right now because I've read about it a little bit, and so I'm going to watch. I'm going to like do it over your shoulder. But yeah, maybe this, you know, just for the sake of that, it speeds up that first few steps. And like some of the stuff, like Ted was talking about, the info that goes, the documentation block at the top of every function, that kind of thing. You know, that's so well known that maybe it makes a whole lot more sense to just have some of the script handled for you.
Well, I kind of like what Ted said as well, where the analyze function seems like that could save a lot of time in just, you know, running down information.
To be honest with you, like, I like what Ted said also, because like if you're an experienced module developer, because like I'm the same way, you know, like if, you know, when upgrading from D7 to D8, I also want to like learn how it works and I want to get in there. So if you're an experienced module developer, like I would also recommend like use analyze mode and then convert it yourself, because that way, I mean, first of all, you know, conversion is opinionated to begin with, and you know, developers don't always like that. And secondly, like that's a really good way to learn, because you know, if you go to drupal.org/list changes, that's just a big giant list of API change notices from Drupal 7 to 8, and there's no organization or filtering whatsoever, and it's just like, how the hell am I supposed to know how any of this applies to my module? And there's it's daunting. It's like, how do I know where to start? And that's exactly what the analyze mode solves for you. It just says, okay, here's where you start. This is the stuff in your module. This is where you learn how to fix it. And so it's a really good way to kind of get into Drupal 8 that way. It makes it very approachable, I think. So that's how I would approach it as well.
Actually, Adam, I think I'm talking about a different page. That there was one that was written more like a tutorial that says, like, if you want to upgrade a module, you know, these are the 10 most common things you'll have to do, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it was like an API change documentation. That would probably make my eyes go crossed.
I think I know the page you're talking about. It might have been for like D6 to 7 though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this could be really useful, not to like belittle it by saying it's going to be more useful like in a year or so, but I think once Drupal 8's more stable, you know, a bunch of clients are going to start to want to upgrade Drupal 7 to Drupal 8 sites. You know, when people are doing it a lot more often, like, okay, I got to upgrade this client's custom code to Drupal 8. That's why I see, like, this would be a really big time saver.
Yeah, I was about to say something very similar, and I was going to do it in the form of a question as far as, do you guys think this will be used more by contributed module maintainers or custom module maintainers?
I think it's going to be more useful to the custom ones. I think there's probably, as far as percentage goes, the custom module is, especially on a project where you're doing an upgrade, you're kind of in the middle of everything and you're going like, oh, and then we have to deal with this. That's probably not very well documented. That was probably, you know, hacked on at the last minute. You know, there's a project that I'm doing at my job right now, which is document all of the times when we did an override and why we did it and how you can sort of fix it. Not that it's not in the code, but like put it onto a Word doc and move that over here into this repository. Document all of the, not the hacks, but all the workarounds, right?
Exactly.
So I think that just like what you say, Mike, is that's going to be where this module shines for sure.
Yeah, I generally agree with that.
All right, so softball question coming at you, Adam.
Okay, I'm ready.
Only because we want to give thanks. This module was sponsored by Acquia, number
and
one.
And Previous Chris. Next. Yep.
Yes. So how did that work as far as their involvement?
Well, Drupal Module Upgrader, it depends entirely on this parser, this PHP parser written in PHP. It's called Farburst, and it's installed as a dependency. And it's written by a guy who works for Previous Next, Cameron, who goes by Grom358 on D.O and on IRC. Super smart guy, super nice guy, and he was like I could not have done this without him, and I would almost call him like a co-author of this thing. Like he and I, you know, when I started using Farburst, it was really, really stable and really good, but not really very mature. Like there was a lot of, you know, it could parse code. It's amazingly good at parsing code, and it can handle anything you throw at it. But as far as modifying code, it didn't really have that feature set. So that's something we were working on while I was writing this, and just like improving Farburst and trying to make it more of a, you know, improve its capability of like generating new code and modifying existing code. I mean, I would almost say Previous Next co-authored it.
So is Farburst, that's standalone. So is that used? What else is that used for?
So far, this is really what we're using it for only.
Was it created for this purpose?
No, it was pre-existing. Like, you know, it was just like this lone GitHub repo that nobody knew about. And I mean, I know Cameron wrote it for some other reason. I think the ultimate goal is that he wants to write like a static code analyzer for PHP in PHP. Okay. And Farburst is definitely a part of that. But yeah, as far as, you know, like this is definitely, Barbarous is like the engine. It's the magic behind DMU for sure. So, yeah.
Okay. What was his name again?
Cameron Grom 358.
If you could put that into the notes somewhere, just so we can give him some credit as well.
Yeah, definitely. He's completely awesome. And if you're in Australia, in Queensland, you should buy him a beer. You should buy him a bunch of beers, because I'm not over there and can't buy him beer. So
for every hour that this module saves you, you should buy Adam and Cameron
and beer. Cameron, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Then you'll have a whole new problem to work on.
drunk coding, it's fun. You should try
exactly.
it.
Exactly. All right, so I want to switch topics real quick. Adam or Ryan, do you guys, I'm sorry, Ted or Ryan, do you guys have any other questions about Drupal Module Upgrader?
Well, I guess it's about, you know, we were talking about if there was a documentation page that you could upgrade from 6 to 7, like, you know, would you welcome there being somebody to go through this module and sort of like document all of the things that it's doing in English so that you could turn it into a documentation page if somebody wanted to do that as well?
I would welcome that. I'd welcome anything that makes it nice and easy for people to upgrade to Drupal 8, because it's way better than 7 in my opinion. So yeah, I'd say so.
Awesome.
So I want to ask you real quick. You mentioned it at the very beginning. Another module that you maintain, corresponding entity references.
Yeah,
and it's kind of it's kind of completely unrelated. But as I was, you know, reading up on this project yesterday, I'm a little bit confused by what it does. And you know, just because I'm going to ask you while we're here. So it seems like this module automatically, like if you create a reference between two content types. And then relate one node, like node A to node B.
Yeah.
It sounds like this module automatically also creates a reference from node B to node A.
That's exactly right. You grok it in fullness.
Okay. So then my question is, why do you need to do that when with views, you can always do the referenced entity or the referencing entity? I guess this is where the hole in my knowledge is.
I've honestly been thinking about that myself recently. I'm looking for ways to streamline it. Uh-huh. I mean, I guess the only reason you would use it is because like it can go a little bit deeper than that, in the sense of like it can support things like field collections really easily. And like it has this bulk update mode that can be very useful, where if you have like, you know, some references that are only one way and you want to make it all, you know, you want to have two-way references for all your nodes, for example, or all your users, it has that mm-hmm. feature. And yeah, I mean, and the other thing is like, you don't necessarily always want to have to use views. I find like, you mm-hmm. know, views, there's definitely some cases where like using a view to do that is a little bit like using a 747 to drive to work. So it's just a bit of a, like, it's really just meant to be a bit of a time saver.
Okay.
But yeah, that's all.
Did you write this for a particular client? Because your activity on it, I mean, there's over 250 commits. So it seems like something that you're continuously maintaining. So I'm just trying to figure out, is this something where you know that there are specific use cases where this is really handy, or?
Don't go by my number of commits, because I look at the commit button in SourceTree like a giant save button, really. Oh, okay. So I tend to commit a lot of stuff in a short amount of time.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, I did not write it. I inherited it from somebody. Like when I was doing something for my previous job, and you know, we needed to use corresponding entity references one, and I looked into it, and they were just finding problems like integrating it with views and stuff, and it was just it didn't really work very well, and like so I started contributing patches to it, and then the maintainer contacted me and said, "Hey, do you want to take this over?" So that's how I inherited that, and ended up rewriting it. But you know,
so how it goes. Real quick, you've got one sandbox project. You might as well, you know, come full circle here, but cover everything. The Better Blocks module.
Yeah, I really want this to be reviewed by people and turned into a full project, because it is. I'm very pleased with it. It's a full. It's sort of a drop-in replacement for the you know, like how in D7 core, the core block system, you have this giant table of blocks, and it's I'm not a huge fan of it, honestly, particularly not if you have a lot of blocks. If you have like 10 blocks, it's fine. If you have like 200 blocks, that table really sucks.
Right.
So what Better Blocks does is it like, it's a little strange. I mean, it hijacks the, you know, the region demonstration page that you have, like where you click in. It hijacks that page and it makes the regions draggable so that you can like, you can just drag the blocks around. Okay. And then you can stage those changes and then go into preview mode, which lets you just browse your site normally with all the changes applied and then just revert back to what you had before.
Oh.
So it's kind of, it kind of takes like the concept of panels and like dragging and dropping things from one region to another and applies it to the core block system. Just purely for UI reasons.
Is this something that potentially you could actually turn off on production? Like it just saves the blocks regularly?
Like it definitely just saves the normal block information in the blocks table just like core does. So there's no reason to keep, it's just, like I say, it's just a replacement UI. So you don't need to keep it on in production if you don't want to.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's something I'm pretty pleased with, and I'm just, I would like to see that be a full project.
All right, cool. Well, let's move on. Adam, you're going to stick around for the rest of the podcast, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, very good. All right, so real quick, some Drupal Easy news. Can't wait for tomorrow evening because I really need to go back and count. I believe this is the sixth session of the Drupal Career Starter Program / Drupal Career Online Program kicks off tomorrow night. It's an online program. Registration's already closed. I suppose if you really want to sneak in, you can sneak in. You have to contact us and figure out how we can make that happen. But it's going to be grand. We've got a what looks to be a fun class of students. I guess I'll report on the next podcast as to whether or not they're actually fun or not. Couple other things going on at DrupalEasy.com. Posted a book review a week or two ago for Programmer's Guide to Drupal, which was a book that's been out for like 2 years by Jennifer Hodgden. I hope I feel like I always pronounce her last name wrong. I've actually had a couple of plane flights recently, so I've been reading a lot of Drupal books again. So a couple that review and another review is going to be coming out here in a day or two. So check that out on DrupalEasy.com. I do want to say one other thing that I'm particularly proud of. There's a blog post not too long ago from the Drupal Association, from Megan Sinicki, about the last two DrupalCons and just some information and facts about those. And I was really excited to see that the DrupalEasy Career Lab session that we presented at DrupalCon Austin was the highest rated session at DrupalCon Austin, which I think was really kind of cool. I had no idea until I read the blog post that was the case. So thank you to everyone who gave us such glowing reviews. And then finally, I was up in Boston last week because it was graduation time for the AquiaU students. This was the class that started way back on December 1st. They had 6 weeks of classroom training with me, followed by 8 weeks of rotations within Acquia. Out of the 10 students, 9 of them are now working for Acquia. So 90% success rate, which is pretty darn impressive.
That's amazing, Mike.
Yeah, it was. Perhaps the coolest part of the whole thing was the students bought me the Back to the Future Lego DeLorean.
Which, oh, man.
I saw it in the store before the holidays, but didn't want to buy it because I wasn't shopping for me. I was shopping for my family. Of course. When I went back after the holidays, sold out and apparently like limited edition discontinued.
Did you mention it every class?
I started mentioning it from that day forward, and eventually they got the hint.
Yeah.
So, and I think they had to buy on eBay or something because it was like the box that came in was like mostly French. So
I think your future students, you should just put your Amazon wish list at the end of your email signature.
That's probably not a bad idea. That's probably how. I finished putting it together last night. The thing is, it's so freaking cool. But anyway. And actually, one of our grads, one gentleman, was actually in the Drupal, the Career Lab session in Austin. That's where I met him for the first time. So anyway, congratulations to the 10 of them. And hopefully they will be active community members sooner rather than later. All right, three stories. Ted, you took a trip last week. Tell us all about it.
I did. I went to MidCamp. So I went out there on Wednesday. So on Thursday, we had a training day. So I did an intro to module development training that I thought went really well. So the training day was sponsored by Pantheon. Promet Source did a BHAT training that I heard good things about. Doug Van did a build, launch, run. It's a Pantheon training. Then Chris Shattuck did the Absolute Beginners with Michelle. And I asked her how to pronounce her name out there, but I can't remember now. Krejci. And I'd like to give a big shout out to Michelle because she was the organizer, at least for the training day, maybe for more than that. And she did a great job. So it was 2 days of sessions and then another day. So training day, 2 days of sessions, another day of sprints. And had two great keynotes. One was from Tiffany Ferris, which she is part of the Drupal Association, if I remember correctly, on the economics of Drupal contribution. So I think it was sort of like an extension or maybe continuing the conversation that Dries did in Austin on the tragedy of the commons kind of thing.
She's one of the founders of Palantir.net?
Yeah, she is.
Right? Yes, okay. That's right. So is she not in the association?
No, I mean, she's very highly involved in the association. I don't think that she works for them. I think she works for Palantir.
Okay. Yeah, it was a really interesting keynote. And then Jennifer Lampton of Twig and Backdrop fame did a keynote on PHP for Everyone. It's sort of a defense of the PHP language, which was a really good keynote. And I didn't go to tons of sessions, but I did see Krell give a really great presentation on Silex, which is a micro framework built on Symfony. So it definitely looks like something if you're wanting to learn Symfony outside of the Drupal 8 context before you delve deeply into Drupal 8, might be a good way to start. And Rethinking Drupal Configuration, which was really interesting, by Scott Rainin from Aten, and he did the sync module configuration code.
Is that the module where you like define the site in like a spreadsheet or something?
So that's not the module, but that builds on sync. So sync is just basically helper functions for creating configuration. Like it'll, you know, there's a, I think, I'm not sure if it treats the fields as objects, but there's, you know, create field of some sort of type. So you can basically, a lot of his presentation was actually on just rethinking the idea that our configuration is the interface. And, you know, his point was configuration is what's saved. It's not the interface that you use. And we shouldn't necessarily be using the same interface for making configuration. Because what works for somebody who doesn't code is not necessarily the best way to do it for somebody who does code and different skill levels. The video I think is out there. It's really interesting. A lot to think about. And then the sync module and, you know, thoughts of upgrading it to 8.
How many people were there?
Ooh, I lost count at 20. I think maybe 350 or something. It was big.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big camp.
And, was it right in downtown Chicago?
It was close. Yeah. It was at the University of Illinois Chicago.
Okay.
We had a lot of space. It was nice.
So you said two full days of sessions.
Two full days of session.
And then a full training day and then a couple of sprint days?
One sprint day. Well, people were sprinting the whole time. Right. Actually, Backdrop sponsored the sprinting tables. And then the Sunday, or was it? Yeah, Sunday was the full just sprinting in a smaller room, smaller
area.
So
when they say PHP for everybody, they mean PHP for Chicago. I'm totally messing with them right now. I think that it's a great project.
So wait a minute. So that was the your training was on, or the training were on a Thursday, and yeah. then this is Friday. this is the camp nerd in me coming out, and then yeah, the sessions yeah. were on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Did you notice a big difference in attendance between Friday and Saturday sessions?
They both seem pretty full. Like, I mean, I definitely, you know, noticed the end of Saturday or later on Saturday.
I think next time you go to one of these, I'm going to give you a checklist.
Okay. Well, just give me a what is the GoPro camera?
Oh, okay.
There you can just monitor what happens. No, I definitely
to your forehead. That would be great.
I actually saw somebody walking around with it there, so maybe I can find that guy and, you know, get some footage.
And you get a more accurate count.
Yeah.
You can watch the video.
No, I definitely noticed later in Saturday. Yeah, definitely less attendance, it seemed like.
Right. So I feel like there's, you know, they're starting to be, you know, this whole thing where they're, you know, nice camp is a really big camp. And yep. bad camp is a really big camp. But the, you know, kind of the middle of the country doesn't have a really big camp. Is mid-camp becoming that camp?
This is my first year going yeah. to any Drupal event in Chicago besides DrupalCon Chicago.
But did yeah, it feel like bad camp or nice camp?
It had that feel to it, for sure.
A lot of activity on the sprint days?
Because
for me, that's kind of what differentiates like I don't want to say a normal camp, but you know, an average camp with these big camps is the sprint days are really, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not fair for me to do, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite to where bad camp or nice camp is yet.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see it moving in that direction. Maybe you have to be sort of established as this sort of mega camp before enough people start to show up for the sprinting. But, you know, that being said, there seemed like there was a lot of stuff getting done on Sunday for sure.
Because the Twin Cities camp is fairly big as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, but if I had to say, like, you know, if San Francisco is the biggest and Nice Camp is the second biggest, then the candidates for the third biggest are definitely going to be Austin, Denver, Chicago, and, you know, maybe I have an Orlando-centric view, but I think we have a large camp, and I think yeah. we could have, you know, a huge camp if the winters keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah, have it in Florida. Have it in January or February. Like, it's nice.
Oh,
in
my
April.
God. We would love that up here. The problem in Boston will help you.
The problem with that is it's really hard on us organizers to organize a camp over the holiday season. That's what
yeah, gets that's what I said. Have it in January and February, and, like, don't do your holidays.
Okay, well, I'll bring that up at our next meeting. I'll see how that goes over.
Mention I said it, yeah.
I'm going to say Ted has canceled Christmas, everybody.
Or the week after Thanksgiving, maybe.
That's a great idea. Okay, thanks, Ted. All right, moving on. Next story, Drupal 8 Accelerate fundraiser. So this was kind of fun news. We covered the D8 Accelerate program a few podcasts ago, where the Drupal Association has put aside a pot of money for Drupal 8 contributors to attack critical issues. What happened in the past couple of weeks is that pot of money has been matched by a group of 7 organizations, and I'm going to mention them because they're giving a lot of money to us. Acquia, AppNovation, Lullabot, Palantir.net, Phase 2, Previous Next, and Wonderkraut. So a worldwide group of organizations there. So they're going to match that $62,500 put aside by the Drupal Association, but only as the community donates money as well. So the general idea is that if the community can raise $125,000, then basically those 7 organizations and the DA will double it, which means the total amount could be $250,000 going towards Drupal 8 critical issues.
So the DA and these 7 organizations are going to match, like the 8, like if I give $1, it's basically going to be added 2 extra dollars.
No, I think if you give $1, it's going to be $3. I think that the 7 organizations have matched the $62,500.
Mm-hmm.
But then for every dollar the community donates, oh wait, now I don't know.
So what? Yeah, I think it's one. I would give one, and then DA would give one, and then those organizations all together would give one. So I give one. It's really three.
No, I don't think so, because it says here, if the community can donate, and this is a quote, and I have it in the notes.
Oh, yeah,
here.
Yeah.
If the community can donate $125, the total amount available is $250.
Oh, so they're just the seven organizations are ramping up. It used to be up to 62. Now it's up to 125.
Yeah, in that sounds right. Exactly. Yeah. And you can, that money is available to basically anybody who is working on critical issues. So there is an application process, and you do have to prove that you can actually succeed in your goal. Right now it is limited to critical issues only. But it's there, and there are people taking advantage of it. So hopefully that will help, as the name implies, accelerate D8. I went ahead just to see, let's see how generous our listeners are. I went ahead and set up a subset fundraiser for this. So if you want to give towards this in the big picture, the Drupal Association has something set up at crowdrise.com. But anybody can go to crowdrise.com and basically open up an account and create a mini fundraiser within that fundraiser. So I've gone ahead and done that, and I will put a link in the show notes. I'll be tweeting it and putting it, on all of our various social media places. But I'm just curious if our listeners can raise $500, which is a fairly low bar. And I'm going to go ahead and get that kicked off make the first donation after the podcast is over. But I think it'd be cool to see if in the next 2 weeks if we could get $500 raised for this, which would actually mean $1,000.
All right, so do we need to do it pledge drive style?
Go ahead.
We are looking for your support. The Drupal 8 Contribute Project needs you just like it needs everyone else. And you, the Drupal Easy community, you have been so supportive. And every time that I know Ted and Mike and Andrew and I go to a camp, we feel so much love that people actually listen to us make fools of ourselves every week. And if you have ever wanted to give back, this is the way that you can do it.
And probably the coolest thing of all, we have celebrities sitting by their phone waiting to take your pledge. You can call Ted at 607-555.
I'm looking around my room for like a thank you gift.
Tote bags. We got to get some tote bags.
Well, I have some old Firewire cables I can't use anymore.
No, I mean, I'll tell you one for real. What's a number? Look, I'm going to make this up on the spot. For your contribution of $50 or more, I will send you, and I'm not even kidding about this, a handmade DrupalCon ceramic coaster that I made myself in the pottery studio. So that is a promise. International shipping, sure, because it's pretty lightweight. I hope they don't break in transit. But yeah, I will send you a handmade DrupalCon coaster. I've been making them. I didn't know what I was going to use them for. This seems like a really good project. So,
all right, cool.
That's my promise to you.
You can put one of those coasters aside for me.
Good.
I will get us 10% of the way there.
I love it.
No doubt. All right, very good. Let's see what we can do. So Ryan and Ted and Andrew and even you, Adam. If you guys can, as you see that either the Drupal Easy or the Ultimike tweets about this, if you guys can help retweet it, that would be fantastic.
And how about this one? Okay. You guys saw me with those DrupalCon iron-on patches that I got made.
Yes.
I have exactly one left. One. So whoever contributes the most.
Yes.
I will send you the final patch.
Wow.
That's the last one I have. Limited edition. I don't know if I'll ever end up making more, because if I end up making more, they will never be the same size.
You should decided one of one.
One of one.
Sign the back of it.
Yes, signed by Ryan Price.
Okay.
Fantastic. I'm sure if I refresh the page right now, I bet you someone already did it. And they probably gave 500 and we're done.
Mike, you know this is not live, right?
Shh, be quiet, Ted. it's live if you're listening to it. So it could be you, Ted.
Could be.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so thank you. I'm looking forward to this. It's either going to be a spectacular success or failure. So one way or the other, we'll have something to talk about. All right. Last story. An opinionated guide to getting help with Drupal. This was a blog post by Brian Braun, who I kind of brushed past it. It came across the plan, and I read through it quickly. I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But then I realized that he had them ranked. He had basically, Brian lists out all the various sources he uses to get help with Drupal. He ranks them from 1 to 7, followed by other options. So I thought what would be fun to do is I'm going to go through this list top to bottom, and I want you guys to tell me if you think this is ranked too high, too low, or just right, as far as if you need help in Drupal, where do you go first, or where do you go second, or where do you go third? Is that fair? You guys understand?
That's fair.
Yep.
All right, number one. Google.
First, yeah.
Second.
Oh, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm going to go with number one. Like when I hit a bug, I just, take the error message and type it into Google and see what comes up, right?
Yeah, I think I agree. I do the same thing. Well, Adam, you said second, so I'll be interested to see what you say is first.
I like IRC.
Oh, now you gave it away.
Oh, sorry.
We'll delete that.
Okay, yeah.
All right, number two, ask people you work with.
For me, that's very true because I work with 120 very smart people.
Right, but would you go to them before Google?
I guess it depends. No, I think I always Google it just to see what comes up. It's really hard to say always and never, but... I would say major amount of cases I Google it, and if I haven't pulled anything up or knocked anything loose, I go to the Slack chat room inside of Blink Reaction because we actually have a specific area where people post that kind of stuff. Yeah, okay. It's great.
I know that Ted, Adam, and I are kind of we're in the freelancer boat here, so the people we work with are pets. So. And my dog, she doesn't know anything about Drupal.
My dog actually.
Yeah,
my dog switched to WordPress after Drupal 6.
Your dog's a traitor.
If I'm working at a client's office and there's other Drupal developers there, then yeah, this would probably be one or two.
All right. So number three, I'm not really crazy about because I feel like number three is the same as Google. Ask on Stack Exchange. And I guess maybe what, now that I think about it, I think what Brian's saying here is literally post a new question on Stack Exchange as opposed to searching Stack Exchange. Have any of you ever posted a question on Stack Exchange?
I feel like I have.
I never have.
I certainly have, and I've certainly answered several. Okay. There was a little while where I felt like I was being more effective there than going into IRC because it was a little harder to track all the conversations and the replies and figure out what the resolution really was. And a lot of things, when I Google something, Stack Exchange comes up.
Right? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, but I've never posted a question, at least I should say.
I've posted one question and I did get three good responses.
But is it your third step?
Yes, it's my third step, Mike, and I've done it once.
Okay. So where's the mute button for Ted? All right, number four, the issue queue. Drupal.org issue queue.
I lost my
tab. Oh, for me, that's not above Stack Exchange. I mean, that's above Stack Exchange for me.
Yeah, for me as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably right after or before Google, especially if it's a...
Well, this isn't searching issue queue. This is posting an issue, posting a question, or posting an issue.
Oh yeah, first I would search it, and then
yeah,
it's pretty high. Posting a question is pretty high.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Adam.
I'd probably put it before Google, just immediately before Google. But it depends on the nature of the error. you know?
Right.
Like, if it's a kind of error where it's like, I have absolutely no idea what could possibly be causing this, Google first. And if it's like coming from, if it's emanating from some module, then issue queue.
Yeah, I guess I would say I'd put this rather low, because if I'm going to post an issue or a question to a issue queue, I want to have like actually researched it for first, so I don't waste the maintainer's time.
Spoken like a module maintainer. All right, number five, I think is almost crazy talk. The official documentation.
I think I'd put that last.
You know, for me, it's only if it comes up in the Google search and it looks like it might have something I need.
I mean, I would say if a module has a README, that's pretty high. Especially when if I've just installed it and I don't know what's going on, then yeah, the README is high, because I feel like if somebody made the effort to make a README file, it's probably more up to date than like a handbook, or, you know, this is the maintainer who did it. So
yeah, that's true. And even though it says it right here, I wasn't separating the README file out from like the documentation page on Drupal.org.
Yeah, so, I'd say the README is before the handbook page.
I think the README for me might even be before Google.
Yeah.
That might be, like, if we limit it to the README file that comes with the module or the theme, that might be the first thing I check.
It's like the last thing I would think to check. I mean, like, it is. I don't even notice READMEs. I'm like, Google doesn't know it. It must be a bug. I'm going to go fix it. That's more just a problem with my own thinking.
I mean, there are definitely times when I know the documentation has something, like with Migrate Module, for example, or with Organic Groups. A couple of other places where I know I have found the answer in documentation before and I can go find it. So
I'm more likely to check it for that reason too. Like, if it's a big important module, I'll probably look in the documentation as well, like Migrate, OG, that kind of stuff.
All right, number six, Ask Twitter.
I think I reserve for if it's like a really abstract question, like, does anyone know of a thing that does this? Like, I wouldn't say, I'm having this problem with this thing. Like, I don't go to Twitter for a specific answer. I go for I want to poll the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
You guys must not read my Twitter feed, because it's always just like I just copy and paste my error messages. All right. So if they're long, I put a picture of them.
Oh, the putting a picture thing hurts my brain.
Followed by WTF ?
Yeah, just that. I get a lot of responses.
Hashtag Drupal, hashtag code life, hashtag PHP for everyone.
Not a whole lot of room left for the actual error message after all those hashtags, Ted. Come on, man.
Yeah.
All right, and number seven. So this is the whole reason that I want to do this story. He has IRC at number seven.
That's crazy talk. It's first.
I think it's crazy. Well, I wouldn't say it's first. You would go to IRC before Google?
I would go to IRC first. It's more, I mean, that this is, may just be me, but I just find it more fun, because I can get on IRC, I can throw like a petulant tantrum about the fact that I'm having an error, and then someone will come up and be like, have you tried X, Y, and Z? And then I can be like, oh, you're a genius. U++, U++, U++. I find it fun.
Where are you hanging out? In Drupal Contribute?
Yeah, I'm in Drupal Contribute.
All right.
So is that if you're using like on a contrib module, like the upgrader or something?
Yeah, I mean, I'll honestly, like, yeah, like it's more if I'm like really deep in code or something that I'll go in there. Otherwise, I would probably just go into just Drupal. I just enjoy IRC.
I mean, I would say like most of my errors are not with, or most of my problems that I'm Googling are not to do with like a contrib module that I'm dealing with. If it's a contrib module, then yeah, I feel like I can go into contrib and pound contribute and ask questions. But I feel like I get less useful stuff if it's just support or pound Drupal. And I don't feel like I can ask my work questions on contribute. If I'm not going to be contributing back, you know, like the work of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I usually go in there if I'm deep in code stuff, because at that point I'm thinking there's probably some kind of problem and like, you know, and maybe I can write a patch for this.
Like a bug in a contribute or core module that you're figuring this out now.
Yeah, but yeah. Mostly I just like throwing tantrums, so yeah. It comes down to that.
All right, very good. Well, there's a bunch of other options here that are, I guess, beneath his number 7 IRC option here.
The one that he puts the very, almost very last, I'd say is pretty important, the API docs.
Yeah, I know. I saw that one too. Yeah.
It's almost like this is an opinionated piece.
Well, no, I didn't get any of that. I don't care about that. All right, very good. He also has, you know, like local user groups down there as well. And I would think that would, you know, I know at our user group at least, if people are have an issue with something they're currently working on at our meetup, you know, we invite them to stand up and, you know, share your problem. We literally actually every now and then we actually have a meetup specifically we call BYOP, which is bring your own problems. And people present, like, here's what's frustrating me, or here's what I can't figure out, and everyone looks at it and screams 17 different answers and, you know, moves on to the next person.
That sounds like it was made for me, honestly.
It's a good time. All right, very good. Those are our three stories. Let's talk about webenabled.com real quick. They've been our longtime podcast sponsor, and they're also going to be one of our Florida Drupal Camp 2015 sponsors. You can check out all the cool stuff they're doing at webenabled.com as well as devpanel.com, which they call cPanel for developers. We've talked about it time and time again. I actually feel like a broken record with webenabled every now and then. But if you are looking for solid hosting with remote Git repositories, team access to those repositories, and you like getting your hands close to the metal, you know, SSHing into servers and having complete control, then WebEnabled is definitely a place that you want to check out. Like I said, you can check them out at webenabled.com and devpanel.com. All right, picks of the week. I see Ryan still typing and Ted's is empty, so I'm going to start with you, Adam.
Okay, well, I live under a rock, I admit it, and probably everybody knows about this, but I want to give it a shout out anyway, and that is the reroute email module, which I just discovered as part of my freelance thing, and I love it so much. Because if you're working on like a social media kind of thing where, like, you know, you expect to have a lot of users and get a lot of email notifications sent out and you're in development, you don't want to be spamming people. And this totally prevents that. And it just works. It's been around since D5. I'm so pleased I heard about it. And if you haven't heard about it, you'll thank me.
So I don't know if you know about it. It's a great module. It actually exposes a configuration variable. So you can turn it on and off via your settings.php file.
Yep.
Which I use it all the time, and I basically have on all of our non-production environments. I just have it automatically turned on.
So. Yeah, that's going to be my way going forward as well.
Yep, that's very cool. Very cool. All right, Ryan, you're up.
All right, I guess this one is a little bit of a downer, but I'm going to mention it anyway. A close friend of the Drupal community. I wouldn't say that I know this person very well, although I have used his code on many occasions and I have seen him speak. And he's just a really great person, great member of the community, great contributor, and evidenced by the fact that he got a Drupal.org community spotlight a couple of weeks ago. This is Aaron Winborn. And Aaron Winborn, I don't think I'm saying anything out of school when he said that he has decided that he's finished his battle with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease this week. And it was really like blew up on my Facebook page. And I want to say it was on Twitter too, although I wonder if some of it got taken down. I'm not really 100% positive what all of the story is, but I'm just going to point you to this community spotlight page. You can see some people saying some very nice things about Aaron and his contributions and the ways that he has helped the Drupal community over the last couple of years. And then in a post written by Aaron, it says, in lieu of flowers, please make a donation to Hope Loves Company, which is an organization for children who have had a family member living with ALS. So thank you, Aaron, for all your contributions.
Is there a link to that organization?
We will definitely put one in there for sure.
Okay. All right. All right. Ted, that's a hard one to follow.
Yes, mine seems very well less important now. But yeah, there was actually a Windborne room at MidCamp, and I think they were fundraising a little bit there for him. So I'm doing config and code, which is a project that I mentioned related to the MidCamp session that I went to. And it's by Scott Runine. Anyways, I'm not sure how to pronounce his username. but yeah, I think I actually haven't used it, but I've looked at it a bit, and I think it's an interesting concept of, you know, why isn't there a better way, at least in Drupal 7, to make config via code, and hopefully there will be in Drupal 8.
All right, very good. So that link, is there a link to his session by any chance that you know of?
Yes, I will grab that too.
Okay, throw that in there, please. All right, so I'll wrap this up with Commerce Customizable Products. It's a module that it's been around for a while, but I never really had a use case for it until this week. So if you're building a Drupal Commerce site, there is a way to actually have product attributes on your products, where each combination of attributes gets its own SKU. Then you build a product display that will display all of the various products, and through some commerce magic, it will automatically turn your attributes into widgets that the users can say, oh, I want a red t-shirt that size medium, and it will automatically update the price and whatever else you want. Commerce Customizable Products goes one step further, where maybe there's some information you want to collect from the purchaser about what they're buying, but not have it affect the price, not have it be a product attribute. The example, the classic example is, you know, maybe for a special instructions text area, you know, if you're purchasing something that is customized a little bit, maybe you need to type in, hey, I want to make sure that we're using the ultra high gloss finish on this or whatever. And that's exactly what Commerce Customizable Products does. It allows you to place widgets, field or field widgets, on the product page to the end user or to the purchaser that they can fill out, and that gets stored as part of the order. Actually, as part of the line item entity, as part of the order. Really handy if you're looking to do that type of thing. I also want to give a shout out. A lot of you know I work on Migrating Core for Drupal 8. We recently published a giant, or maybe not giant, but a large meta issue called Finalize the Migration System, because we are getting very dangerously close to having the D6 to D8 migrate upgrade path. We're calling it complete, although I'm sure there will be some bugs found moving forward. And then turning our attention to D7. And as part of that, we wanted to, actually Angie prompted us to come up with a plan. A plan that involves the upcoming Drupal Dev Days in France as well as Los Angeles, so that we can get some goals in place so that when those events come up, we have stuff for people to do. So if you're interested in that, there will be a link in the show notes to you can kind of get, provides a nice overview of where the Migrate and Core initiative is at this point. Okay, here we go. Next up, I'm talking a lot. So Ryan, you want to talk about Florida Drupal Camp?
I would love to. What is this number 8? How many times have we done this now? A lot.
Yeah, it's 5 or 6, I think.
Okay.
It's got to be more than 5. Maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah, I was going to say more than 6 for sure.
Okay. Let's go 7.
Okay, wait, sorry. Doing math, I want to say that we did our first one in 2007, didn't we? Am I making that number up?
Well, while you're talking, I will look it up.
Someone should research that. So, yeah, down here in Orlando, you know, yes, Mickey Mouse, Harry Potter, Shamu, all those people, but also a really awesome Drupal community. We have been doing a camp for a while, as we were just talking about, and we have a really, really nice venue that is on the east side of Orlando. It's probably about a 30 or 40 minute drive from any theme park, and you can actually see that real people live in Orlando, too. Lots of Media Current people live down here, a couple of Blink Reaction people. We have, the Golf Channel is a Drupal site. We have, Bonnier does Drupal stuff with Popular Science. I'm sure I'm going to be forgetting a lot. Our local library does Drupal stuff. So there's a real community, and there's real people doing Drupal stuff down here, not to mention Mike and his amazing classes. And, you know, hopefully we get Ted to come down. Our featured speakers are going to be great this year. Obviously, we've been talking to Adam for the last hour, and we have a couple other ones that are coming up as well. I know Tess Flynn, who does the flag module, is going to be a featured speaker. Am I getting that wrong, Mike?
No, you're right. Keep going.
All right. And I'm going to have to pull up the website because I don't know. Have we actually announced the fourth person? Okay, we have.
We're about to, because I think I just did. So Mike Herschel, who is a front-end developer for Lullabot, will be talking about front-end development. And Eric Baldwin, who is a front-end developer for Acquia, will be talking about theming in D8.
Well, and both Mike and Eric, both, you know, Florida boys.
Homegrown so talent.
We have to enjoy those. Yes. And Eric, I got to say, he looks nice with his Google Glass there in his photo. So you couldn't really ask for a better group of people working on the Drupals to be your featured speakers, but we will also have a handful of other rooms with lots of great sessions that I'm sure will be announced very soon.
Yeah, something like 30 something sessions total. Some crazy, crazy big number.
The coat sprints are always going to be a great thing. And then are we allowed to talk about, Mike, there's going to be like a bring your kids to Drupal camp element as well?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that's actually announced yet, but let's just say that's coming.
It's in discussion. Yes. What other awesome things are happening? I mean, always free lunch and breakfast and coffee and shirts and swag that come with your registration.
Yep. $25 registration. We feed you all day. We give you a free T-shirt. Or a T-shirt with your registration fee, along with other goodies. The tote bags actually arrived at my house today for the camp. So we've been doing that for a few years, giving the recyclable grocery bags with the fabulous Drupal Diver on the side of them. And a bunch of other, I mean, we've got a bunch of really good sponsors, and we do a pretty good job of packing the goodie bag pretty well for all of our attendees. So it's a really good time. It's really just a great community run event for the Florida Drupal community. And at this point, for the past few years, it's we've had more than a handful of people coming from not only the Southeast U.S. There's probably a few dozen people coming from the Southeast, but now from all parts of the country, which is fun. And you were right before. This will be our seventh camp. The first one was 2009.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. And definitely stick around for the community day. Although, if you want to go enjoy Florida, go on an airboat ride, go see one of our awesome museums, or go to the beach or the Space Center. A lot of people forget about the Space Center when they talk about Orlando, but that's a really cool attraction that you have to go check out. And I'm sure Mike would agree with me. But yeah, if you have to go see that stuff, we understand, right? It's Florida. We get it. But yeah, please come join us.
All right, Ted, online class. Tell us about it.
Yep. So now, I have the online class. I have students run through it now. It's an online Drupal 7 module development. So
it's self-paced, right?
Yeah. So it's...
How does it work?
Each lesson has an intro video which introduces sort of the concepts and shows you a stage of the module finished. And then you have a bunch of written content that explains the concept. Like, say we're doing a block, it explains the concept of the hooks you need for making a block and points you to simple examples in Drupal core that, like, say, for the block one, I think it's the Who's Online block. So I try for each concept to sort of point out the simplest core version of it. And then you go off and you do it yourself, and you ask questions online of me if you can't figure it out or you're having problems. And then you look at the solution code and solution video.
Do they have direct access to you?
They have direct access via I am notified right away when somebody asks a question.
And then do they have 24/7 access to your home office as well?
Yeah, I have my phone on vibrate under the pillow, and the only emails that come through after 11 are ones that have dual disclass.
You go above and beyond, my friend, every time.
No, they have quick answer responses from me, but not 24/7. Sorry for those who are in the other side of the world who, you know. But yeah, and then there's challenge exercises where they make I give instructions or basically an outline of a module, but at that point you should have figured out how to do the rest of the module.
Okay. If anybody needs Ted's phone number, just let me know.
Mike will be tweeting it later.
There you go. All right. So where can we find everybody? Adam, where can we find you online?
Twitter. Twitter's a good place. It's DJ Ben Approxima. So it's my D.O username prefixed by DJ. And there you go. Right. Sometimes I post links to tunes on there as well.
So. All right. Very cool. Ryan?
I go by Liberator with the Web 2.0 spelling, drop the last vowel. And I do want to encourage people to check out the Blogging Fringe podcast that I have picked up doing now. It is a lot of fun to do. And if you like talking about theater that's pretty much it, I guess. Touring festivals, we had different people on, storytellers, a couple of people that do professional storytelling. Fun stuff. Other things that I'm interested in, I do podcasts about. So bloggingfringe.com.
Alrighty. I'll jump in here for Andrew, who couldn't make it today. Andrew M. Riley on Twitter. As always, Drew Belizzi on Twitter and Ultimike. Oh, Ted, I totally skipped you. I'm so sorry. Ted, are you still online?
Yeah. Okay, I'm on Tedbo with the Web 3.0 spelling. And 6miletech.com.
Okay, I felt you had enough attention this episode, so very good, Ted. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine.
All right, let's wrap things up, Adam. Really quick, 5 questions. What is your current development environment?
It's a Mac. I use Vagrant with the Vlad stack.
Vlad stack. Never heard. How about your IDE?
Oh, PHP Storm, of course.
Oh, of course. Okay.
Of course.
And one person in the Drupal community we should be keeping an eye on.
Grom358.
I know. I feel like you've already answered.
Yes.
Grom358. Okay, very good. Where would you like to see a future DrupalCon?
International or domestic?
Doesn't matter. Anywhere in the universe.
Reykjavik.
Oh, that'd be an expensive one, but...
It'd be awesome.
I can't even spell it. I'm okay.
The only city in Iceland, basically.
There you go. Okay, I'll figure out how to spell that later. Spelling check. Oh, spell check for the win. All right.
Yay.
What's one aspect of Drupal you'd like to learn more about?
How to contribute to core, I guess. It's not really an API thing, but...
Okay, that's interesting. How to contribute. So as far as how do you get involved more, or...
I guess so. How to get involved more, and like
how just go to a code sprint, and you know someone will find out that you want to contribute to core, and then you'll have a new best friend.
I did that.
I helped. I worked on getting Behat and Mink into core. I've done a little bit of it. I just want to do more of it.
Yeah, we should probably mention, as far as upcoming events, I don't have it written down in the show notes here, but DrupalCon Los Angeles. Less than 2 months away.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
anyone want to pay for me to fly out there?
Scary close. I actually just bought my plane ticket late last week or over the weekend. So very cool. I know, Ted, you're going.
I am going. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Well, on the subject of anybody want to pay for you to fly out there, I don't know what counts as a D8 Accelerate grant, but that might be one.
Oh, hey, that's a good idea.
I am actually the recipient of a scholarship for DrupalCon Los Angeles.
Nice.
And I believe mainly because of my work with Migrate and Core. Because I'm going to be leading, some sprints out there. So I applied for it and I received, a cash scholarship to help defray my travel expenses.
And this right here is why I want to contribute more to core.
Exactly. I mean, no better reason to contribute. Well, I don't want to say no better reason, but that's a hell of a reason to contribute.
Yes, it is.
I did it on a whim just to see what would happen, and lo and behold, here we go. All right, last question. Sorry about that. If you could add one new feature to Drupal core with a snap of your fingers, Adam, what would it be?
My Better Blocks module. I want that UI.
All right, very
not
good.
Not to be too self-promotional, but there you go.
All right, cool. So if you are listening to this podcast for the first time, you can always subscribe to the entire series. We're up to episode number 147, so we've been doing it for a little while, a few years now. You can go to iTunes or Miro or Stitcher or any one of 1,000 other podcast services and probably find us there. Just search for Drupal Easy Podcast. You can always just go directly to DrupalEasy.com and listen to individual podcasts going back all the way back to podcast number one. Back in, I don't even know what year that was. Let's say, what are we going to say, Ryan?
Well, it's a similar number of years of the Drupal camp.
Yeah, 2010, somewhere around there. Each in between podcasts, we're always keeping our eye out for stories that we're going to talk about, and we tag them on Delicious with the Drupal Easy Podcast tag. And now that I'm at the bottom of the rundown, I see we don't have any more podcasts planned, although I think that's a mistake. I think we do have some guests planned. I just don't have them written down. So the next podcast would be a big surprise for all of us. Adam, so thank you very much for taking time out today to talk to us.
No problem. Thank you for having me on.
Can't wait to meet you in 2.5 weeks at Florida Drupal Camp. Looking forward to your session.
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be sunny, and it's going to be interesting.
If you want, we can move it outside. I mean, whatever you want.
Oh, hell yes. Yes, we should. We have visibility issues, but...
Well, thanks again for all your hard work on the Drupal module upgrader. I'm sure it's going to save a lot of people a lot of time, and that's... that's fantastic.
Here's hoping.
All right, Ryan and Ted, thanks for joining us on the podcast, and we will see everybody on the next Drupal Easy Podcast.
I've been sifting through the masses of endless divs and all their classes. The one I need is there. I know I should have found it hours ago. Slide my food, dear, under the door while I'm drooping. Yes, I've been this way.